I'm Peter Medlin, and you are listening to Teacher's Lounge. And if this is your first time hearing our show, I've got good news. It's based on a really simple idea that we've all had teachers in our lives who helped us become who we are today. And every educator we have on this podcast, whether teacher, coach, or professor, is nominated by the folks who listen. So we want you to be a part of the show with us. Please tell us about the educators who've inspired you and the folks in your community who deserve a spotlight. You can email us with your nominations at teachersloungenIU.edu. Now today on the show, it is Dr. John Lanning. He teaches social studies and psychology at Morris Community High School. And John is not afraid to hold his students to a standard of excellence, to push them to do their best and hold them accountable, and to do all of that with empathy.
I tell the kids, if you come in and you work for me, I will jump over the moon for you.
His former student who nominated him for this show talked about how he goes above and beyond. If he's going to hold his students to the standard, he's got to hold himself to it too. And we talked about what it looks like to go above and beyond for your students, what it's like teaching at his alma mater, how he's changed after 25 years in the classroom, and much more. One quick thing I did want to mention up top. Unfortunately, the audio quality of our interview is not, frankly, up to our standard. We had an issue with the microphone and actually had to replace it after this recording. It's still very listenable. It's just that his audio cuts in and out a little bit. Just wanted to let you know. And before we get to my conversation with John, I have another education story we want to share. It's hard for almost any school to find enough teachers, but I went to a Rockford Middle School where staffing challenges are worse than ever, and the teachers left are feeling burnt out. Dee Edgerton turns on a clothes dryer in her classroom at West Middle School in Rockford. When students struggle and need a less crowded space to learn, they're assigned to her room. She also cooks with her kids and does laundry for the school's sports teams and for some of her students.
He has nobody washes clothes. He has nobody that's actually making sure he has hot meals. Ms. D's making sure you get at least 2 hot meals a week.
On top of that, she teaches 8th grade math. It's a lot. And several West teachers, like Edgerton, say staffing issues at the school are the worst they've ever seen.
469 of our students have not had a certified math teacher in 2 years.
That's over half of West students.
They're missing foundational skills. They don't even know what exponent was.
And she says none of their students who need targeted Tier 2 math support get it from a certified math teacher.
She's not certified to teach math intervention. Neither am I. That's just a fact. I'm not qualified.
Edgerton says they're a year behind when they get to high school, and she worries that's putting them in a position to fail. And it's not just math either. Special education is also hard to fill. By law, general education classes can only have 30% special education students. And West staff say they have at least 18 classes exceeding that threshold, and many others are close to the limit because of a lack of teachers. A spokesperson for Rockford Public Schools said they can't comment on staffing at specific schools, but that every student's placement is decided based on their individual needs. So, how does this happen? For one, it's just hard to find qualified math and special ed teachers, especially at a low-income school like West, where they won't make as much money as in the suburbs. And number two, as West counselor Elizabeth Ulrich says, they can't keep the teachers they have.
I think it was 6 teachers that have left since the school year began. Some of them, I presume, by choice, and some, you know, were dismissed. So it's been challenging.
The district's teacher retention rate is nearly 90%, right in line with the state average. That means over the past few years, 90% of the district's teachers have stayed. But at West, it's 69%. Ulrich says on days when several teachers are out sick, they have to combine multiple classes and put them in the auditorium.
A 7th grade math class and maybe a 6th grade social studies class, and then throw in an English language arts class or whatever. So 3 different classes. That's not really teaching. That's just supervising them. That's babysitting them. And that's them getting behind in their coursework.
And teachers like her know that there are no easy solutions, but they feel like district administrators don't care.
We're not accusing anybody of holding back these warehouses full of special ed teachers and bilingual teachers. And I mean, we know that this is a reality, but the fact is, they could come into the schools, they could see the hallways, they could see what it's like for themselves.
Edgerton says she used to see district-level admin substitute teaching or helping coach teachers, but that lately, that's missing. She says it's frustrating because, thanks to their staff and principal, the school's behavior and attendance has improved, but now that progress is slipping away. Jason Pope handles teacher recruitment at Rockford.
I would argue that having a certified teacher that maybe doesn't hold the proper endorsement but has the proper license to be in the classroom is a better alternative than having just a traditional sub in the classroom.
He says they have a $6,000 signing bonus for hard-to-fill positions like math and special ed. And ultimately, he believes developing homegrown talent is one of the best ways to find teachers who will stay. That's what Dee Edgerton did. She started as a paraprofessional and worked her way towards a teaching license. And even though they're stretched thin, teachers like Edgerton say they are not leaving West anytime soon.
We come back here because our kids need us. These kids need us.
All right, now it's time for my conversation with social science teacher John Lanning. We start off talking about the U.S. history course he's currently teaching.
We go from basically Reconstruction through the 1960s.
Oh, interesting.
And then I also teach, recently I kind of moved into the recent U.S. history class that I'm teaching this semester.
What is recent these days?
So recent for us is we do a quick review of the Cold War, because we do cover it in U.S. history, but just to get them back into it, hey,
sure,
this is what happened, and then we basically go 1968 to the present. So that's really great. And this semester, I'm teaching that, and then it kind of pairs next semester. We do what's called a contemporary world problems class, where we examine basically current events, where they do a lot of writing on current events each week. And then we do some basic units. We do four units on the environment, economics, where they do some investing, and play the investing game on Investopedia that we do with them there and teach them those things, human rights and terrorism. And then I also do psychology here. I do the intro to psychology class for the high school kids. We also offer JJC psychology as well for dual credit here as well. And with that, we cover a wide variety. It's basically like a psychology 100, like you're going to take in college.
Intro class.
Yeah. And so you get that experience, and then they can, one, either take it and end up, if they're a junior, end up taking the JJC psychology here, or I tell them, look, if you save my stuff, you can go and sign up at JJC or any of these other junior colleges around the area. You basically have a Psych 100 course.
I actually just had a conversation with a college psychology teacher a couple months ago, and I was thinking about, like, I'm curious for you, what do you hope students get out of an intro psychology class at the high school level? Because when you really break it down, you're like, these are really essential things in my life about, like, learning about how my thought process works, how to manage my emotions, how to manage my time, all these things that are really essential to, you know, being an adult and being a person. But for some reason, I feel like when I was in school, I didn't make the connection that, like, my psychology class is going to help me become, like, a better person, you know?
Yes. That's one of the things, like, time management and work ethic. That's a big part of what I teach. And even here in our social studies department, all of our social studies teachers, very important to teach that and that deadlines. And, hey, we have this many minutes to do things. I'm very minute-oriented in what I do because I've taught for a long time, so I know this activity should take about this amount of time, right? And it's like get them to go so they can concentrate and think and get to that. As far as psychology, the big thing is we do a lot of different things to think about mental health and mental fitness and trying to create that for our kids here. We do like I have them do a sleep and nap journal. So I have them track their sleep to really find out, am I sleeping enough? Am I sleeping more than I thought? Or am I like, I'm not sleeping near what I should be sleeping? And it's a way for them to learn, hey, I may have to make some adjustments.
No pun intended. I'm sure that's an eye-opening experience
yes.
for students sometimes to write that down.
And sometimes, a lot of times, it's just like when you do goals. You can think about them, but you really don't know until you write it down.
Yeah.
And so when I make them write it down for a whole week and really getting themselves into a routine. So when they do get out on their own, right, they're much able to handle that much better for themselves. And how much better they feel if they do get a full night's rest sleep versus when they don't sleep very much.
That's something that is so, like, I think intellectually we all understand that, like, you're probably going to do better in class with your friends, with your family, if you have more rest. Like if you get better sleep, you're going to perform better. But really to have to write that down can really make that very clear to some people too, that like, yeah, you're probably going to do a little bit better on the test tomorrow if you get a full night's sleep. Yeah, no kidding. When it comes to like social studies, do you feel like just in terms of curriculum and the way that it's taught, is teaching history very different now from what it was in 2000, 2001-ish?
I don't think so. I think basically the biggest thing in history that we got to cover is where do we start and where do we end? You know, because history
literally
just keeps getting bigger. Yeah.
And also, so, specifically for you guys, what is recent history, right? Yes. Like you guys started in the 1960s, which is like almost 70 years ago now.
Yes, I know. It's kind of crazy to think that. So for us, probably adapting what you teach and what you don't. Mm-hmm. Basically, we kind of just do a quick review with our U.S. history kids of leading into the Civil War. We talk a little bit about the Civil War, and so they can understand the process of Reconstruction.
Yeah.
So a lot of that we're going to depend on our younger grades, we hope, that are going to hit that going through. And in that time period during the Revolutionary War and the Constitution Age, that's really covered in our civics now, that civics is required. And so once civics became required, we could kind of take that era and move that era out. Let civics do that, and then we could actually get past World War II, which the kids in just regular U.S. history really like, because basically every kid got to World War II, and it's like history ended. And it really doesn't. And so we were able to at least get them into the 1960s.
Is there for you a particular era of U.S. history that you are particularly fascinated by and enjoy teaching? Because I have had, truly for me, an unprecedented year of history. I've read so many more like history biographies and books this year than I have in a very long time. So it's been on top of mind quite a bit, but I'm curious for you, is there a particular era that you tend to gravitate towards?
Two, the 1920s and also the 1960s. Those two eras are very similar because they have a lot of social and political history. So a lot of times history, you think of history people, oh, they like the wars and all that sort of right. stuff. I'm not a big war guy, but when I teach it, my kind of philosophy on teaching it is looking at it from a social and a political end. And those two eras are so fun to teach because they have so many political changes and the way the world changed to set us up to get into the next era. And then the 60s that kind of sets up what we're still talking about today.
So you have been teaching at Moore. You had a brief step over where you went and taught at a different school district. But when you started your career, you started at Morris and you've been here for quite some time. And this is your alma mater. You went to school here, which I was mentioning to you before we started recording, is fascinated because we've had one other Morris teacher on here on the show in the last year who also teaches at the high school. Shout out, Andrea.
Yes.
And she also went to school here and came back. And I'm curious for you, like, what does it mean to you to teach at your alma mater?
It's nice to be back at my old high school. I like to give back. Morris is a great community, right? It's not without its problems or its faults, like any community, but it's a great community to grow up in. And we have a great student body here at Morris Community High School. It's a smaller structure where kids feel really involved. We need them to participate in those sorts of things. Bolingbrook was a great school to teach at, but it had 4,000 kids, right?
And so it's very different.
It's very different, right? And you don't have, there was school pride, but the school pride is different here than it is up there, and there's just so many other things outside of school kids can do and that sort of stuff, versus here there's not as much to do outside of the school and that sort of stuff.
You guys become kind of that cultural hub for
the center of the
sports,
the
and
town.
Theater and arts, all that type of stuff.
Yes. And people get excited about it. The community has gotten behind us. You know, you come to one of our assemblies and that sort of stuff, and you're just wowed.
Did you get to teach with any of the teachers you had?
Yes, and what you know, one of them, my department chair right now, Dave Awerda.
Really?
Right?
He was there when you were in high school.
He was in high school, yes. He's getting ready to retire here in a couple years. He's one of the reasons why I wanted to teach, go into social studies. He was one of those ones that really inspired me when I was here, coached me as well. And so he was a big factor in kind of guiding me. I always kind of knew I wanted to be a teacher. It was kind of one of those things inside of me, even when I was like in middle school and that sort of stuff. I always liked school.
I was going to ask that. Like you had we always ask people about their teacher kind of origin story. It was something that you knew from relatively young that you wanted to do.
Yeah. And for me, I think it was just inside of me. And I knew at a young age that that's what I wanted to do. My brother, he really didn't know what he wanted to do.
Yeah.
Me, I was very focused. By the time I came to high school, I knew exactly what I wanted to do.
Do you have teachers in your family?
No.
Interesting.
My mom probably would have been. She was the secretary to the board here back in the 1970s before I was born.
So she was involved.
She was involved in the high school here.
Yeah.
And she worked with the superintendent and also with the athletic director at the time. You know, she always had that. And I think I always asked my mom, I'm like, hey, if you didn't go this route and you know, she decided not to go to college until later on. She got some education a little bit later on. She said, yeah, I probably would have been a teacher. You know, I mean, but she just didn't, she grew up in that age where, you know, college wasn't encouraged all the time and that sort of thing. But if she felt she would have been more encouraged to go to college like that, yeah, she probably would have picked teaching. It's kind of a unique thing. So I have a lot of my mom's personality traits, right? And so I have a lot of that in me. So I think that's kind of what drove me to it.
Did you know what you wanted to teach at that age or just that you wanted to do it? And then, as you mentioned, the person who is, you know, the head of your department now that you had as a teacher, you had as a coach. I imagine he teaches social studies, right? So,
yes.
Like, was it him that steered you towards specifically
there
social
were
sciences?
Two different groups that I was kind of looking at.
Yeah.
Social studies, because I was really good at social studies. I really enjoyed social studies class, that sort of thing. And then I also was looking into special education as well. But I decided when I went to college, I would go the social studies route. It was going to be one of those two that I thought I was probably a little bit more passionate on the social studies end. The one thing is my career has grown. The one thing I'm very lucky I'm able to do, and I get to blend the two. Because with the U.S. history, I co-teach U.S. history with Kristen Kubinski here at Morris Community High School. And it's one of my favorite things to do during the day. And I get to blend my passion for social studies and helping those learners that need a little extra help. I really enjoy that. That's a big part of my job as a teacher, and I really enjoy that part of it and having that camaraderie with our special education department that we have here.
So flashback, we were talking about you knew from a pretty young age that you wanted to be a teacher and eventually figured out social studies and what direction you were going to go with that. Do you remember, was there a moment when you first actually got to student teach or lead a classroom where you were like, oh good, this is something that I like, this is something I'm good at? Because I always feel like there's two different moments where there's the, oh, I think this is what I want to do and this is the path I want to go down, and then there's the validation of that, the, oh, I actually can do this.
Yes, it was fantastic. U of I had a great program down there, and I wrestled down there, so I had to stay in the Champaign area. There was other options where you could come back up north, but I did mine at Champaign Centennial High School, so I did 8 weeks with Mr. Globe there. He was in his retirement year when I did it, which was great, and I got to work right with...
Say Mr. Globe?
Mr. Globe, yes.
And was he a social studies teacher named Mrs. Globe? Come on, yeah.
Yeah, and he was fantastic. And so he was a grizzled veteran, and he was great for me. He pushed me hard. You know, there were things, it wasn't easy sometimes. One of the things I still remember from that is he made me write all of my own tests. He wouldn't let me use a generator at all. And so I wrote every one of those tests that came through, and it really helped me learn the skill of test writing without using any aids or any of those things. And it was all based on what I taught. And I had a great time with the kids down there. There was a great group of kids there at Centennial. And then I got a unique experience where I got to do 8 weeks also at the middle school. I'll never forget my first day in my middle school placement. I bombed, and I knew I was bombing. And she was in the back of the room, and she knew. And I was looking back at her as I'm bombing right now. And she goes, she's shaking her head. Yes, you are, because I was way over their head. And I was like, okay, I got to adjust. And so we had a great conversation afterwards, and that was part of the learning experience. And the next day, I was like, yeah, I gotta make this a little bit easier. And so
at this point, 25 years in, do you ever bomb?
I don't think I do.
Not in that way.
Not in that way. No, because I was just clearly way over there.
Right. It just was not connected.
And it was just like, this is going to be a little bit rough. Right?
But I'm sure there are days that things connect more than others.
Oh, for sure. Right. And there's obviously those days that are great days that everything connects and the kids are in a great mood and everything's going well. And then you have the days when, you know, people come in and it's like, and it's like trying to draw it out of them. I think that's more of it for me today than anything else.
Is today a good day though?
Today's a great day, right? I really enjoy teaching, right? And so I come in enthusiastic every day. If I come in sluggish, they're going to be sluggish. So I've always said that either as a teacher or when I used to coach. So I got to bring my energy every single day so they can match my energy.
Do you ever write your own tests still?
Yes, I do. For the most part, I do. And obviously, I use the generators too. So I'll go in and use some of those. And then I'll take those and tweak those, you know, and those sorts of things. But that was a skill that was thanks to Mr. Globe. I mean, that was just something that was very difficult to do. But it was worth the exercise. And he had a plan for me Eventually, he did let me use it on the last one or two. He saw how tired I was, and he's like, yeah, you've done your job.
Well, so. Listen, even more of a lost art in the ChatGPT age also.
Yes, and using that, that's the next big thing in education. How do you we think deal it is? With it? Yeah, how do we deal with it with the kids? How do we deal with it with us?
Does it come up a lot for you?
Yeah, the kids try and use it. So we've had to create an AI policy, right? Because we want the kids to think. And there's appropriate, we've talked about
we
appropriate
We want the kids
use.
To think. No kidding.
Yes, yeah, that's the biggest thing. It's like, guys, you can have somebody write this, but then you're not learning how to write. So there's appropriate uses of AI, and then there's inappropriate uses. For me as a teacher, one of the things that I have done, and with our U.S. history kids, we help them with the reading portion of their ACT. So one of the things that was really helpful for me is I was able to use AI to basically create some reading quizzes from the SAT, ACT type questions and generate it. And that saves a lot of time, right? And I had to go in, and obviously AI is far from perfect because when it does it, even when you sell it, hey, I want you to mix up the answer choices. It always said B or C.
I wrote about how different school districts were using AI a couple months ago, earlier this year, and there was one example where someone gave me where I think this was at the elementary school level. This is like maybe first, second grade, I think. And they were using one of the tools that can basically allow you to create an AI chatbot that will allow you to speak with the chatbot as if that bot is a historical figure. So it's like you're asking the historical figure questions or something. And here the thing was, is that they were using it as like AI Harriet Tubman to learn about like the Underground Railroad. But the problem was, is that I like went on there because they like showed me it and I was like, okay, this is interesting. I'll ask it a couple questions. And I asked it a couple questions and like several key details were just really not right at all. And so it's another one of those things where it's like, cool tool, definitely some good uses, but also this can still happen, you know?
Yes. Yeah, and that's the one thing, and that's who I try and tell the kids. Look, you have to verify things if we use it, and there are some things that could be time savers and things like that, but it's still in its infancy, and we can't get away from reading and writing.
Thinking,
and you have to be able to think.
Yeah.
And so one of the biggest things I know all of us in our social studies department here is we question kids a lot. Right, and we get them to think about history, making the connections to today, those sorts of things, and that's so important to get them to understand how to think, and then and especially in history too, we talk about sourcing. So, what is your source? And so we use Stanford has this thing. A lot of history teachers might talk about this, the reading like historians.
Yeah, where, the civic online reasoning.
Yes, and it shows you what the source is, and if it leans left, if it leans right, and kids have to determine whether it's leaning left or right, or is this a more centrist approach? Who's the author, and what perspective are they bringing? And the thing with history is you got to get kids to understand is you could have two people see history very differently based on the perspective that they have. And in the end, which is it? It's probably somewhere in the middle.
I'm fascinated with civics instruction. And we talked about, you know, teachers getting more and more responsibility. Obviously, a couple of years ago, the state passed a law about how there's like a mandated media literacy, where like, again, those same types of like skills that the Stanford group does of like lateral reading, evaluating sources and things like that. And it's so funny. I talk about this because, you know, the state will pass, like, everyone has to do a unit of instruction on there. Even though we don't have a definition of what exactly a unit of instruction is. So it looks very different district to district. And it's always fascinating about, like, you know, if that's something that is specific to being covered in social studies classrooms. Is it something that is covered in science classrooms? Like, it's just there's no unified, like, test or evaluation. So it's just like by nature going to look very different district to district. So it's always interesting to see like what that looks like.
In our school district, it's in our business department.
Oh, interesting.
And it's called digital literacy.
Yeah.
And so they do lots of different skills, kind of like the old, they even include a little bit of like typing in there. Like, but it's very, you need to see back in the high school days and all that sort of stuff. You had to do like word processing or typing all that sort of stuff. Basically, it's that course kind of has morphed into like a digital literacy, media literacy class where that's learn the keyboard is one portion of it, but that's only a small portion versus like 9 weeks or a semester that you used to have to spend on the keyboarding part of it.
Yeah.
And so they learn about social media and all sorts of stuff that comes from there. And then we obviously supplement things here in social studies as well with sourcing and all that sort of stuff and getting kids to understand who authors are and what perspective they represent.
And so obviously we've been talking about your teaching career, and you also coached wrestling for a long time.
I coached wrestling for a long time.
You wrestled in college, you mentioned?
I wrestled in college at the University of Illinois. My coaches down there, Coach Mark Johnson, Jim Heffernan, and Steve Marinetti have influenced my life, obviously, tremendously. They really helped me in my career when I first started out, when I was coaching for many, many, many years. And I brought a lot of those ideas with me back to my coaching days here, and that work ethic and that drive that also drives me as a teacher. It drove me in the classroom, those sorts of things as well. Just an unbelievable influence on my life personally. And I can't thank those guys enough.
And you're not currently coaching wrestling?
Yeah, not currently coaching wrestling. My mom has some health struggles that she dealt with about 9 years ago. And so I take care of her. I kind of got two full-time jobs.
I'm
part caretaker and part teacher here and do those things. So I had to lessen my coaching schedule. When I first started out, I was coaching three sports. I was doing football and wrestling and tennis. And then I basically went down to football and wrestling and got out of the tennis and then went down to wrestling. And then, you know, eventually I had to get out of that. But I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, do you miss it?
Doing those things. Yeah, there are times. You know, a lot of my friends that I wrestle with at U of I, a lot of them are all coaching in Illinois now. They coach some great teams. We even used to have they still have this. They called it the Illini Open, and all the coaches that wrestled at U of I could get their team into there, and it was really fun for us to all get together for a weekend in January and have our teams and showcase our teams. It's really fun, and I miss seeing those guys on a regular basis. And at some point, you know, maybe down the road, get back into that at some point, but we'll see, you know, it just depends on how things go.
I think so. I actually recently wrote a story that was about, you know, college sports and a team, and it just made me think about how, you know, I played sports in, you know, through middle school and high school. I didn't play in college or anything like that, but, just like being on a team is such a special, like, dynamic and such an interesting social situation that I think a lot of us, you know, once we graduate, go out in the real world, it's a real thing. You're like, man, I wish I was like on a baseball team or something, because it is so unique and special. And like, I'm curious, like, for you, you know, it's different to be in the classroom. Obviously, like, each of your classes are going to have a unique dynamic and things like that. But it is also just a special, unique kind of thing to be on a team.
Yeah, absolutely. If anybody out there that wants to look some of these up, there's always these things like why a wrestler makes the best employee, or why a football player, or why the speech theater kid makes the best employee.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of articles on this, and why they make the best students in your classroom, because of those things, the things of hard work and discipline and teamwork and understanding that we all got to work together, those translate into the classroom. Those also translate into your business world, because you're never going to work, almost never, in a bubble. You're always going to have to work with people, right? No matter what it is. I mean, unless you're a very unique job where it's just you individually, but you're going to always have to do that. And those things that you learn in sports and what those coaches can bring down to you, it brings you right into your professional life. Right? Yeah. And sometimes, you know, I think sometimes the best coaches are the best teachers, because you got to be able to do both, really, as a coach or a teacher. If you look around my room, right, you can see a theme that kind of goes around here with success and failure and executing. And I bring that into my classroom every single day. And I tell the kids, look, you got to post every single day. And you got to post for your, you know, in a sport, you got to post for your teammates. You got to post for your community, but when you get into the school, you got to post for your own academic stuff, and you got to post for your jobs, right? That's the best way that you're going to do is be there every day and understand that you got to work within the framework of the community that you're in, whether it's at work or in school.
We've kind of touched on this a little bit, but one of the questions we always ask people is about the folks who inspire you and you feel like have helped be, you know, build you into the teacher you are now.
Yeah, going back to my time at Bolingbrook, Debbie Habis and Jim Harvey, they were fantastic. Our department chair was Debbie Habis, and Jim Harvey was one of our experienced teachers there that influenced me, especially early in my career.
Yeah.
And those sorts of things. Our principal there, Jim Mitchum, was fantastic. at the time and helped influence a lot of the different things that we built into it. They were a little bit ahead of the curve, especially when I came back to Morris with data management and some of that. Some of those bigger districts were ahead of the curve there. So when I came back here, I was able to bring some of that knowledge with me. All the guys I work with in our department now are great to work with. We get along really well. We really set a high standard for our kids.
What are some of the big ways you feel like you've changed as a teacher?
I think the way that I've changed the most probably is I was kind of in that bridge period, right, with the technology revolution that was coming in and those things. Probably the biggest way that I changed throughout my time is the way I kind of chunk my classes. One of the things I learned early on is like the attention span of kids. You get them for about 10 or 15 minutes. So one of the things that I did early on, especially when I noticed if I was lecturing, because in a history class you can lecture and you can do these sorts of things. And I've gone away from the longer lectures, right, especially as I kind of advanced. So shorter lectures, right, more interactive, right, and switch things up a little bit each time. So I have a little bit of old school in me, a little bit of new school, right? I'm in that period where I have a little bit of both.
The attention span, at least the perception, is that it's getting smaller and smaller. So you're like, my 15-minute chunks maybe have to be 10 now because I want to make sure that I still have their attention.
And that's why when you switch things up, you give them the basic idea of it, you switch into this, then you switch into an activity. Hey, and you give them something that's going to last 10, 15 minutes. You know, that's something you learn as a teacher.
So and like how long are your typical class is like 50
class,
minutes?
50 minutes, yeah.
So you've got like 4 or 5 different things that you're
We're gonna chunk into it. And so like in my US history class, in my Rush class, we always start with the news program Carl Azuz does, the World A to Z. So in my US history class, one neat thing that we do is the first 10 minutes allows me to take attendance, get with kids that were gone, talk with my co-teacher about the day and that sort of stuff. And then the kids are writing news facts in there. And then basically in December, right before finals, we'll create the first half of our year timeline. And then we'll usually we'll talk a little bit about current events, especially if something big's going on, then we'll start with that. And then we usually will go into our lesson for that particular day where, you know, like today we were working on our 1920s magazines today. So they were looking at different social and political aspects of the 20s with baseball and different figures and the jazz age and those sorts of things.
Great baseball decade.
Great. Boxing, right? And all the sports, yeah, right, and different things. The music of that year, the dance of the year, that sort of stuff. And they worked in groups and projects on that. And we finished up talking about what we're going to preview for tomorrow. So we mix in a lot of different things, trying to mix it up a little bit, not doing the same thing every day. You know, get them some different things with projects, interactive assignments, those sorts of things. And probably less lecture. As I've gotten older, it's probably less lecture. That's the one thing that I was like, I'm losing them here. So, and I could see it, and I was like, I got to switch up a little bit.
I only have a couple more questions for you. I had found, obviously a former student who nominated you for the show, but as I was researching and looking things up, I saw a different compliment that was paid to you in a different publication, one of the local newspapers, I think. And I wrote down what they wrote, and they were talking about how they said, Dr. Lanning goes above and beyond to help students thrive, whether history or psychology. And I was curious for you, what do you think it looks like to go above and beyond for your students?
For me, that's my job as a teacher. I tell the kids, if you come in and you work for me, I will jump over the moon for you. And so
what does that look like?
For me, whether it's letters of recommendation, whether it's me making phone calls, whether it's me helping you, if you need something, I can do that for you, but especially getting them into the next stage of their life.
And that happens? You do?
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll make calls. You know, I mean, one of the nice things about me is I networked a lot when I was in college, right? I tell the kids when they go to college, go be the mayor. And so when I was down there,
shake
I met
hands,
a lot
kiss
of people,
babies.
Kiss babies, do all that sort of stuff. I met a lot of people. You kind of create that and you create a network. All my friends that I had that were wrestling guys that were in certain things or professions. I know a lot of guys in our town that are blue collar workers that have businesses and stuff like that. It's like, hey, if you're going to be a blue collar guy and you're in a particular business and you're a good kid, hey, I'll give a call. Right. You know, and so that's one of those things. And I think you could do that or advice. Right. I'm always there for kids, too, if they need that sort of thing, too.
And then the person who did nominate you for our show, who sent in a message, I want to read again the message that they sent to us, which is he was always there for me and my classmates and definitely helped put a smile on my face and gave everyone a laugh. He's always been a real and genuine person inside and outside of being a teacher and coach. if anyone deserves it, it's him. He's always been a dedicated educator and someone I would always look forward to seeing at school, even when school was the last place I wanted to be at.
It's amazing, right? The impact that you can have. It's just amazing what they can do. And you really don't know as a teacher what impact you're really having. And because sometimes they express it to you and sometimes they don't. And you kind of see that. Or sometimes they're like, I kind of don't get it right now. But then all of a sudden, a couple years later, they get like, oh, yeah, I remember that. We want to see you go and succeed and go find your passion. That's really what we're here to do. And so we thank you for all the nice things that you do and the gifts and that sort of stuff. But really, the biggest gift for us is to see you succeed and find what you really want to do in life. And if we could do that, that's always been my goal as a teacher. It's always been my goal, even from year one.
And right? Now you've been teaching for so long that you've been able to probably see that a lot of, you know, students that you had 15, 20 years ago and what they go on to accomplish.
Yeah, the impact of it, right? Just get to see that. Some of them, they grow up, and now like some of them have families from early on. And the impact that you had on their life, it's hard to believe that you did, right? You know, a little comment or, you know, being their coach or being there for them in a way or a letter of recommendation that you do, right? All those sorts of things. Or like I had a student contact me from my Bolingbrook years and goes, hey, I'm thankful for the work ethic that you taught me, right? And so, and it's something I still teach in here today is work ethic and work hard. He's like, you gave me my work ethic, right? Because I coached him on a wrestling team there and also we had him in class too.
Both my mom and my stepmom were both classroom teachers. In fact, my mom was a teacher for many years here in Morris, not at the high school, but at the elementary school level. And obviously one of the great things about having teachers in your life is that you get to come home and hear something that happened in the classroom that day. They've always got really great stories of things going on in the classroom. So for you, this could be a funny story, it could be profound, it could just be something that you feel like exemplifies what a day in your life looks like. Do you have a story of something that happened in the classroom relatively recently?
With me, I don't know if I have one very specific, but the one that probably goes back for me goes back to one of my students at Bolingbrook. When I was coaching him in the wrestling season, his dad had a tragic story, had stomach cancer. And he was a very good wrestler, and his goal was to win the state championship. And we knew that was going to be something that was going to be difficult to do. But we coached him through the entire season. You know, it was touch and go with dad all the way through. And we got him to the finals, and he won the state finals. It was the first state champion I had a chance to coach. It was an unbelievable experience to help him through it, to get him through and get to that point, and the elation that you felt and the relief that I felt, because he was a kid that if he didn't win this thing, he was going to feel awful. And so there was one thing. It was, all right, we got to go do this. And the way he worked, the way he overcame injuries that year, the way he overcame touch-and-go moments with his dad all the way up until that, and his dad got to come Matt's side and see him win that state title. And it's something that's kind of seared in my brain for that. For sure, in my teaching career is probably one of the biggest moments that I've ever had, to know that I could help get him there for that. And his dad coached him from the time he was a little kid.
Okay.
And so it was an unbelievable experience for me to help him through that. And then just in the classroom, just everyday things, like one of the things, even this year in our classroom, one of the things we're really working on our writing skills. And so trying to get kids to, when they write their document-based essays in history, just to see how they produce after what you taught and how they executed the parts that they teach for you. And when you see that as a teacher, you're very, very proud. And you're like, this is excellent. You executed it to the point. You paid attention to the directions, right? You did a very nice job. And you could tell the work. And I always like to compliment when I see good work. Right. And that's one of the things. I'm not afraid to get after a kid. Right. But I'm also, what makes me unique is if I get after you and you improve, I'm going to compliment you. I'm not just going to say you did bad and not say anything when you do good. I'm going to tell you when you do good. It's kind of one of the things that's always unique to my personality. It's just something where I'm at, where in the teaching world, we talk about this line in the sand. And even from when I was student teaching, when I was young, even my cooperating teacher said, I could always go to the line, but I would never cross it. And so kids feel comfortable with me, right?
Yeah, you can only do that when they know you care.
When you care. And it's just, it's something unique to me. I think
it's probably the superpower that I have, right, with me as far as that. It's just
is that something that you knew you had?
I just kind of had that. It's just I'm a very empathetic person, and so I've had those things in there. My mom taught me a lot of empathy for people and a lot of those things, and I think a lot of that is that because I feel, and when a kid is struggling and they see it, they can see it on my face. I mean, they know I feel for them too. And so
do you think a lot of that comes from sports and wrestling and things like that too?
I think that's part of it too, right? And all those different ways that we got to know each other and working together with other kids.
Right. And just like, you know, pushing, you know, your students and your, you know, wrestlers, and that, like, it feels very like, you know, something that a coach would talk about, right? Like that you can really push them, but again, you can only get them there if you know that they actually do care about you.
Yes, and that's it. And that quote that's up there, I know Nick Saban and some of that, it's kind of a version of what he does with it. But this idea that great teachers or coaches, you can fill that in there, love their students enough to hold them accountable to a standard of excellence. And that's what I try and do in our classroom, Ms. Kubinski and I, when she's co-teaching with me, that would usually exceed the standard that students for themselves. They push them out of their comfort zone. Just because it is uncomfortable doesn't mean it's not motivated by love. And so I always want kids to feel comfortable. It's not that you don't want them to feel comfortable in a situation or in a classroom. But any time in life, I tell them, guys, if you're sitting comfortable, you're not improving. The only time you're going to improve is when you have a little bit of uncomfortableness that's going to be there. And it's that way to push you to make you better. It doesn't mean that I don't love you or care about you or all those sorts of things. We do, right? That's why I'm pushing you.
But you're looking for excellence.
Yeah, it's a standard. It's a standard of excellence that you got to get. And that's kind of growing with the maturity of it and understanding how I grow as a person. Right. And it's something that's developing in teenagers. Right. It's not, you're not going to have it right now. Right. But that's what we're going to try and get you to by the time you leave us, as close as we can. And then that's going to improve well into the 20s. And
you've probably had some like moments, though, where it really felt like it clicked for somebody.
Yeah. You have those moments right in the classroom when it does kind of kick in. And we've had some special students here for sure. Yeah. A while ago, we did have a kid that got a perfect score on his ACT and went to the University of Alabama. I mean, he was just
Wow, brilliant. Shout out Nick Saban again.
Yeah, just brilliant. I mean, he was brilliant, and just the work that he produced in a classroom, oh, as a teacher, it was just phenomenal.
Yeah.
Right? When I did sociology a little bit way back in the day, and he created this whole Jeffersonian society for a project for us. I mean, it was so good, right? I've never had a piece of work like that. I mean, it was just phenomenal.
Wow.
And so you have those sorts of things, and those are special moments, right? And you know you're one part of it, right? And so, you know, when you have kids that have all different ability levels and all that sort of stuff, and so it's fun just to see everybody improve. It's going to be this just outstanding work, and some is just going to be growth, right? And that's fine, too. And just seeing that kid find a love for something and truly putting full effort into it. And then when they get into their life, they'll put full effort into their job, their families, those sorts of things. And that's really what you're trying to do.
Last two questions. One of them will be more specific to social studies. One of them will be a little bit more broad to teaching in general. But what's something about teaching social studies you wish more people knew?
The biggest thing I try to get across to them is this idea of listening to both sides. It's one of the biggest things in our history. We have gotten so divisive in our politics. Is, guys, look, there's good points on both sides, right? And we need to listen to, in these algorithms and all these sorts of things that send you things that you like, you also got to look at the other side, right? And understanding that you got to see two sides of an issue.
And then finding what the truth is.
Finding what the truth is, because it's probably somewhere in the middle.
And then what's something about teaching that you think is more important than people might realize who don't do this every day?
Just all the things teachers have to do. We do so many things that you don't know. The teaching part for me is, as I've aged here, is the easy part. Sometimes it's the dealing with the things that pop up with mental health, poverty that people have. We have a special helping hands room. Our social studies department's gonna do a drive for our own helping hands room right here at Morris High School, that we have an obvious need for kids that need different things like that. All the different things that we do for kids with food and extra help and all these sorts of things that a lot of people don't realize teachers are doing. And I think that's probably the biggest challenge for people coming into the profession, is knowing how much other stuff you're going to deal with other than just preparing your lesson and grading. It's a lot more than that.
And it's a lot of time that you have to spend. People think, oh, they work 9 months out of the year and all that sort of stuff. But it's really not. I mean, you're really prepping in the summer. You're doing things at home. Even into this late stage of my career, I'm still doing things in the summer, and I'm still doing things at home from time to time, right?
Of the extra stuff.
Yes, it's all the extras.
Is that something that – are there many more extras now than when you started? I know that's something that sometimes you hear from teachers that all that is – has there's become more and more on
your plate. I think the big thing is for sure the data.
The data.
And I think that's good. It's good and
bad, right? It's very time consuming, but really examining the data, going through those things, it's really going to help make you a better teacher. Right. And these ideas of the professional learning communities that are just fantastic, and what you can do with that, even in my doctoral work, it's fantastic what it can do to like bring people together within your department and to really think about education, the way you teach things, how we word things in a test. Those things are all there. It's trying to figure out like, okay, what didn't they understand here? What didn't they understand? Is it worded wrong? Is the way we taught it? Is it them because it was homecoming week and they were kind of all over the place, right, or whatever it is, or prom week, right? And so there's different ways you can discuss that. Or, hey, we hit this over and over and over again and they still messed it up, right? And so maybe we look at who taught it which way and how we introduced it. So it gives us different ways to think about how we do our classrooms. But the data is probably the biggest part of it. I mean, it's
time consuming.
We're getting ready to go into our post-test season and our final season, and we got to record all that data, and we'll be going through that too as well next semester too. So
it also feels like sports. You guys have now like an advanced analytics department.
Yeah, and it's good to look at the analytics, right? And that's
like,
something
what's your
in my early yeah
what's your
early in my career
your
it wasn't as much about the analytics. And I think over time that has. Even at Bolingbrook, we were exposed to some of the newer data things, but it was more process than it was actually diving deep into it and really trying to get to the heart of how can we improve them based on what they did on a test. Because early in your career, and it thinks, well, they didn't study for the test or they didn't understand this, but like trying to understand why they didn't get it, right? And even if they didn't study fully, why are they still getting some of these basic things wrong, right? And so those are things that we can look at. But definitely the analytics and the data portion of it is probably the biggest thing that especially new teachers become overwhelmed with, because not only do you got to deal with the behavior in your class, kids that are having issues, teaching and planning and all those sorts of things, and grading, dealing with parents, and then on top of that, here's some data we got to do too. So it's a lot, right? And I think we do a pretty good job here at Morris High School with our younger teachers. We do a good job of helping them along of the way and kind of getting resources to them. We've done a good job in these PLCs planning out our curriculums much better, right? It's all written down now. Before it was like, yeah, this is what we do and we all kind of do our thing, but now it's a lot more organized and you can see it, and we can post it on the internet and people can see what it is. Parents can see exactly what we're teaching, all those sorts of things. And I think over time that's gotten a lot better.
That was Dr. John Lanning, social studies and psychology teacher at Morris Community High School. Once again, sorry to John and everyone listening for the audio issues. It has now been corrected. And thank you so much to everyone for listening to Teacher's Lounge. As always, please feel free to nominate a teacher in your life to be on the show. It's how we get all of our great guests like John. Send them our way to teacherslounge@niu.edu. And please continue to send us your story ideas so we can keep bringing you the best education coverage possible. Wherever you're hearing, please subscribe, leave us a rating, or share it with a friend. It's the best way to get even more perspectives on the show. Big thank you to the Northern Illinois band Kind Of for the music you hear each and every episode. And I've been your host, Peter Medlin. This is Teacher's Lounge.